You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
With the week of the baseball season have been played, what have we learned? Really nothing. I mean, let's face it, it's just a week of the season. It's 8 games. But we did catch up with all the reporters to get the lowdown on what's going well, what's not going well, and injury updates. So let's take a listen. Jane, 4-5, so very, very decently mediocre way to start the season. And so they swept Seattle, and there were good times all around. They lost their first 2 games to the Angels, and the current series going on as we're recording this. So I think a week ago I was asking about Sean Doolittle, and I have to ask you again because he seems to be, quote, trying to figure it out still. Looking at a lot of video, he's blown a couple saves. What's going on with him?
Yeah, it does seem like we're just talking about this. He had a good little stretch after we talked last week, after he had given up a game-winning home run, and then last night comes in and gives up the go-ahead run to Giovanni Soto to give the Angels the win. And he was just as disappointed, frustrated last night as he was a week ago. I mean, the first thing he said to us was, no offense, but I'm already tired of talking to you guys. This is a guy that takes his job really, really seriously. I think it would be easy for him to just kind of shrug it off, call it a fluke thing, just because their bullpen has been so good for them here this first week and a half. They already ranked first in the majors and innings pitched. Their strikeout-to-walk ratio is really good. And the talk of the team so far has been the bullpen to this point. I mean, especially just because their bullpen was so bad last year. This is kind of the one thing that's been carrying them. So I know for Sean, he's disappointed in himself. I think, he understands that he's kind of that anchor in the bullpen. The team relies on him, especially last night. They got such a great performance from Kendall Graveman. The offense came through. And then we not only saw a shaky performance from Doolittle, but also from Mattson, which we hadn't seen. Ryan Mattson had basically been perfect up to that point. And I know both were disappointed, but Doolittle definitely took it the hardest. I think right now it might be a struggle for him mentally just because we haven't seen this from him. I know he did end up staying late last night. Bob Melvin was saying he was still there when he left. And he was going to take a look at some video. And I think the encouraging thing is his stuff is there. It's just a matter of, mistake pitches. It's not like he's really struggling with everything. We've seen good outings from him. We've seen, how effective his changeup is becoming. But right now it's fastball location, and he relies on that fastball so heavily that he really can't miss with those, especially in one-run games like we saw last night. So, I think he's kind of going back to the drawing board, taking a look at a few things. And, I'd be surprised if this trend continues just because he is so hard on himself. He's his own toughest critic. But I wouldn't be surprised to see him come back and kind of put it together soon.
Yeah, I think that when we dissect what teams have been doing this early in the season, of course, I call it like overreaction time because it's impossible to gauge, like, especially like a team like the A's where they could be really good this year or they might have a bad season. I mean, it's not like, not to dump on some of these non-contenders, but the Rockies, the Padres, I mean, we all know what's going to be with them at the end of the season, where they're going to be in the standings. So you kind of have to just, I guess, draw from what you think may happen. Like with the bullpen being as good as it has for the most part, I mean, that's got to be an encouraging sign just over the course of a season, because of course we know that that's like the worst way to lose games when the bullpen is blowing it all the time. But the prognostication for this group is like it's going to be pretty solid all year, I would think.
It really is. And I mean, of course, games like last night, Doolittle's blown saves, they're magnified just because of the impact they have on the game. But like I said, the bullpen's been really, really good. I mean, they've racked up a lot of innings. They're one of the few teams that haven't even had a day off yet this season, and that's really tough at the beginning of the season, especially for a bullpen, just because you're still kind of easing into things. Teams have to be careful with workloads. particularly with their relievers. So these guys, I mean, they've picked up a lot of innings. They do have an off day tomorrow, which will be good for everyone, especially them. But, you know, you look at this group collectively, and it's very solid. I mean, they have guys pitching in the sixth and seventh innings that are capable of pitching in the eighth and ninth. It's a really collective group. It's kind of nice to see them coming together in that way. I know last week in Seattle, John Axford kind of gathered a group dinner of just the seven bullpen guys. And you like to see that, especially after a year where things just, I mean, everything went wrong for the bullpen, it seemed, and guys were up and down, and you never really saw that cohesive unit that you need to see and that a team needs to rely on. And this year, the A's think they have that. And, of course, over the, you know, the course of the season, no bullpen is going to be perfect. So I think, you know, what you're seeing here, it's, of course, a small sample size, but I don't think they really expect that to continue. And you look at the body of work outside of, you know, these two games where Doolittle's given it up, they have been terrific. And their starters haven't been really going deep in the games yet, so they've been having to pick up a lot of slack. And, you know, so far, so good. I think it really is going to be a strength of this team.
Yeah, and so I want to ask you about Billy Butler, because he's not playing against right-handed pitchers. He's been sitting a lot of games, and I know he's kind of a fascinating study because big contract, has not performed to that contract so far, and it seems like he's losing some playing time. So what do you glean from all of that?
Yeah, it's really interesting to watch, just because this would not have happened last year, and it didn't happen last year. I mean, there was no way they were going to sit a guy that they just signed to a three-year, $30 million deal for it to be happening already. You know, we saw him sit five consecutive games, you know, against right-handers. I mean, his career numbers obviously favor against lefties, but last year he actually hit righties better. And, you know, you look at the money he's making, especially on a team that has a restricted budget, it's kind of surprising to see him sitting. But I think the A's, you know, are pretty adamant about putting together what they feel is their best lineup on any given day. And right now there's just so many different variables that are, you know, that's going into their lineup, a lot of platoon players, and they don't want certain guys sitting too long. And so, and, you know, that means that some guys are going to be in the DH spot against right-handers, and that means that Butler's on the bench, just because, I mean, that's, you know, the DH spot is really his only spot. They're not going to play him at first base. So he's been good about it. He understands that, you know, he's always an option off the bench. But, I mean, you look at their next week or two, and they're going to face a lot of right-handers again. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how they handle this. You know, I know teams are also careful, too. You know, you don't want to sit a guy too long, get them out of whack. And I know that Butler was pretty happy with the way his swing had been coming along in spring. But he's hit into two double play balls his last two at bats, something we saw a lot last year. So now you're thinking, you know, oh, is this, you know, affecting the swing again? He is back in there today against a right-hander, but, you know, I'm not sure the A's know how they're going to manage this the rest of the season. I don't think there's one clear formula for anyone right now. And it's just kind of a day-to-day thing. But they're insistent right now that it's not a strict platoon with him. But it's kind of hard to believe that, you know, when you do see him sitting so much.
Good afternoon. This is the Texas Rangers podcast. We're here at Safeco Field. I'm T.R. Sullivan. I'm with Brian Holliday, the Rangers catcher they acquired at the end of spring training from the Detroit Tigers. And Brian, I know you loved your time in Detroit, but you're from Dallas, went to school at TCU. It's got to be a big thrill to come back and play for the Rangers.
Yeah, without a doubt. You know, when Brad and Al called me and informed me that I was getting traded, you know, there couldn't have been a more ideal team than the Texas Rangers. Go home is unbelievable. It's a dream come true, and it's just been a lot of fun this first week.
Any great memories of your childhood of going to the ballpark in Arlington?
Yeah, definitely. I remember going and seeing a lot of games, and like I had mentioned before, me and my buddies would all get together and we'd go to the dollar hot dog nights and see who could eat the most. And we just had a blast going out to the ballpark in Arlington.
Now, you played high school in Dallas at W.T. White High School. Tremendous baseball program, tremendous coach David Shepard. What was it like playing for him at that school in that great program?
Well, coming in as a freshman, it was pretty intimidating playing for him. He's got such a great reputation. He's such a great coach that, I learned so much from him. And he really taught me how to love and enjoy the game of baseball. And he really steered me in the right direction.
After WTY, you went up to Gainesville, beautiful town, played at North Texas Junior College. And then you went to TCU, played with Jim Schlossnagel. And your senior year, you had quite a year going to the College World Series, right?
Yeah, TCU, I mean, some of the best times of my life. I had just a great experience there. Schloss does such a great job of recruiting and getting good people there. And we were lucky enough to go to the College World Series in 2010, and that's something that I'll remember forever.
And you also won a very prestigious award, the Johnny Bench Award. People of my generation think Johnny Bench was the greatest catcher of all time. And you got to meet Johnny Bench, I understand.
Yeah, that was a very unique event, and it was a lot of fun getting to go up there and spend the weekend and get to meet Johnny Bench and go through those camps that he runs and just kind of pick his brain a little bit. And he's a very interesting guy, and we had a lot of fun up there.
Now, like every baseball player, you have your own special interests outside the game, and yours is, I understand, rock music. Who are some of your favorite bands and your favorite songs?
I listen to a lot of Jack White stuff and some of his new stuff and a lot of his older stuff with the White Stripes and the Raconteurs. And, I got the pleasure of meeting him in Detroit. He's a native of Detroit. And so I got to meet him and became pretty good friends with him and actually been to a handful of his shows. And, you know, he's a great guy, and it's just, you know, a hobby of mine. So.
Well, a lot of great music venues around Dallas, too, that I'm sure you'll enjoy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. We went and saw Pat Green this offseason over at Billy Bob's, and that was a lot of fun. But, yeah, definitely like going and seeing live music any chance I get.
Well, this should be a fun year for you, catching for the Rangers in 2016.
Yeah, I'm really excited for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Brian. Thank you for joining us. That's the Texas Rangers podcast, and we'll see you next week.
One week ago, I was speaking to my good friend Greg Johns about how well the Mariners' season has begun. And now a week later, we have to talk about what's been going wrong. Greg, I mean, it is amazing because everybody was, like, really happy. They had that season opening series in Arlington with the Rangers, and everything was going well, and Cano was hitting all these home runs. And, oh, my goodness, now we're looking. They're 2-6. It's still really early. I mean, we're not going to have to start worrying until, like, June. But they have lost 5 home games in a row, which is a little disconcerting. And I guess you have to point to the offense on this. Is that correct?
Yeah, that's for sure, Allison. And you say we don't have to worry till June, but the team is already concerned, and as we sit here Wednesday, before they close out the homestand this afternoon, they had a team meeting last night, and it's pretty early in the season to be having a players-only meeting. They don't like losing 5 games in a row. It's never been done in franchise history. It's not the way they want to start, and the veterans got together and said, we got to talk about this, got together last night after the game, you kind of hate to see that kind of stuff happen this early. It does show that there is concern, but they want to nip things in the bud and kind of make sure everybody's on the same page. So, yeah, I mean, it all comes down to hitting. Hitting is hard in Safeco Field in April, and they ran into an A's team that shut them down real well, and Texas has knocked them off here twice in a row. And you just got to find ways to score runs, and they haven't done it. Cano, as we talked about last week, red hot in Texas, comes out 2-for-20 here in Safeco, just not the way you want to start, and a lot rides on Robinson Cano and hasn't gotten a lot of help elsewhere. So, yeah, you got to score runs to win. 7 runs in the first 5 games of the homestand does not get it done.
Yeah, and I guess we hear the old cliches, and it's hard to really extract exactly what is discussed, especially in a players-only meeting, because then you're really not going to have anybody wanting to talk about it. Sometimes when the manager gets involved, you can have some players that are sniping behind their backs and get them to tell you something. But I would imagine that the message is stop trying too hard and just stay within your game. Because when it's an offensive issue, that's where I think it gets most concerning. just because it gets in their heads, and you just can't let that continue.
Yeah, 100%. And there's an old saying that's easier said than done, but sometimes you got to try easier. And that certainly is the case, I think, in Safeco with hitters that, you know, you hit in Arlington, the ball just jumps off your bat. You hit in warmer weather places. You've been in Arizona all spring, the ball just jumps. You get into Safeco in April, and even though the weather wasn't horribly cold, you know, it's just that wet kind of air, and balls die at the warning track that they think of it as going out, and the next thing you know, I got to swing a little harder. I got to hit the ball harder in this park, and it starts to wear on you, and other teams come in and leave and go back to other places, and guys that are going to play here all year, they start thinking, boy, I got to hit a little different. I got to adjust, and sometimes it's not the way you want to go. Sometimes you just got to stay within your game and play. And it's interesting, Allison. This team was built, you know, they knew that. They built this team to have a higher on-base percentage, do things, not rely on the long ball. And those are the things they got to stick with. They just haven't been able to get it going yet. The on-base guys, you know, not getting on to create opportunities, and the big guys not really driving them in when they do have chances. So, you know, runners in scoring position has been miserable. You know, they haven't stolen a base yet this season as we sit here. So not doing the big or little things that they kind of need to do.
Wow. Okay, so now that this brings us to Scott Service. So how does – I mean, let's just kind of make an assumption here that maybe this continues for a little bit. Of course, we don't know what's going to happen. But, you know, with a first-year manager, how is he handling it so far? And is that like a bigger challenge for somebody who has not been through it in a management position? Of course, he had a long career as a player. He's a catcher, so he really had to be like the cerebral guy. But how does that translate when you have such a slow start and a new manager?
Yeah, the way he's handled it that I've seen is he's very good with, you know, just kind of working his way around, talking to guys individually, you know, when they're hitting, you know, they're out in the field, he'll want, you know, kind of wander around, step up to guys one-on-one, and kind of handle things that way, trying to keep things loose. And sure, it's a challenge. I mean, he doesn't have a track record to fall back on, but he has been around the game a long time, and he certainly understands what they're going through. You know, he's doing what every manager that I've ever seen does in this case. You know, just stay the course. You know, not panic. You can't start changing everything 8 games into a season. You just can't. You know, if you start panicking, you know, the team starts to panic, and that's the opposite of what you want. And it's easy for fans and anybody else to say, hey, you got to change things, you got to do things. But that's really not the way it works over the course of 162 games. You don't make snap judgments in a week. So, you know, he knows that, and he's playing it that way. And but certainly quietly encouraging guys, I think, to you know, they stay within themselves. It's been his big message, be yourself. You know, you got to be yourself. Don't start trying to hit the 3-run homer if you're the guy that we need to get on base and make things happen, you know. So, you know, that's been his approach. And you know, they hit out on the road. We're going to New York to start a 10-day, 9-game road trip here tomorrow. So, you know, they're going to get back into, you know, some different parks and maybe relax a little bit, get away from home. And, you know, maybe that's exactly what they need at this point. It's just to kind of take a fresh start and hit the reboot.
Have they started slowly at home in the past? Is that sort of a, maybe not this drastically, but it just sounds like it could be an issue with just having played in Arizona where balls are just flying left and right and then coming back to that atmosphere where the air is thick and things are more dense and harder to hit. I mean, is this like a kind of a normal occurrence for them every year?
It's been a, you know, since the park opened, when Safeco initially opened, you know, it was very, very good Mariner teams. The 2001 team played very well at Safeco.
Right.
They won 116 games. They played well everywhere. But over the course of time, you know, the years have gone by, it has been an issue. Mariner teams have not played particularly well, not hit particularly well at home, but it's a pitcher's park. They've had great pitching. You know, there's a reason that pitchers like to come to Safeco, and hitters have to adjust. And it's, some guys handle it, some guys don't. It's a tough place for right-handed hitters. I've seen a lot of right-handers come in and struggle here. You know, but it does warm up. The ball carries later in the year, mid-season. It carries a little better sometimes when the roof's closed, different conditions. So, you know, it's the way it's been. But the last couple of years, this team, their record on the road is, their win-loss record on the road has been better than at home. And that's not something you want to see. You want to be have a team built for your ballpark, and that's what Jerry DePoto came in. That was the big off-season plan, was to make a team better suited for Safeco. And you know, I think that's obviously the long-range plan, and it didn't play out very well the first 5 games. But like I said, you don't make snap judgments in five games. You know, they have to go a long way further to see how this thing is built. And you know, definitely they wanted to get more athletic. They wanted to get the guys on base, you know, do things to fit this park better. And the fact that it didn't work in the first 5 days, not reason to discan the thing. I think you got to stick with your plan and play it out.
Yeah, I still have hope for these guys. So hopefully in another week when we talk, things will have improved. But I still believe in the Mariners. So thank you, Greg, so much. Hang in there, and we will talk to you soon.
You bet. I would guess next week will be different. We'll ride this thing out for 6 months. It's always fun. That's what makes baseball a great sport, is how things change over the course of a season. So it will be interesting to see how this one plays out.
Alden, before we get into what's been going on with the Angels, tell me about, I guess, what's going off the field with them. So they're playing a game of horse with a basketball team. What's going on?
Yeah, they're actually playing a game of pig, which is just three letters. It's a shorter version of horse. A few of the Angels players are here at Warriors practice right before the Warriors play their last game of the regular season, which would end up being, if they win, the record for most wins in a season. Mike Trout's here. Albert Pujols is here. Joe Smith and Cliff Pennington. Mike Trout, moments ago, beat Draymond Green, who some consider the most important player on this Warriors team, in a game of pig. He made like two straight shots from 5 feet beyond the three-point line. So Steph Curry kind of found out about that, and so he challenged them to the same game. He quickly knocked out Mike Trout and Albert Pujols. So now it's Joe Smith and Cliff Pennington against Steph Curry, who just made a half-court shot, by the way. I don't like their chances, but it seems like they're having fun.
That is hilarious. So, yeah, I mean, I guess guys that I know, like, here in Houston, like Houston Texans will come and take batting practice at Minute Park once a year. They're all terrible at it for the most part. But I guess, like, professional athletes like to test their skills against athletes from the other sports. I guess that's kind of a thing, huh?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And Trout's jump shot is not the prettiest. Actually, Joe Smith has a really nice-looking jump shot. But Mike Trout, for some reason, just got on a roll in that first game. He made like five shots in a row, and he won. And I think somebody won this game. I'm almost certain that it was Steph Curry. But I think it was really cool for them to come out in this environment. They're all huge basketball fans, all the guys who are here. Mike Trout's a Sixers fan. He was doing a media scrum with the Warriors media. And when he said that he was a Sixers fan, everybody just let out a collective moan. Poor guy. But they gave Steph Curry an Angels jersey. Steph Curry gave Albert Pujols a ball, a signed basketball that he's going to give to his son, AJ, who's a gigantic basketball fan. So it's been really cool for them.
That is pretty awesome. Okay. Well, anything else we're going to talk about is really not going to be as interesting. But I guess we have to talk a little bit about what the Angels have been doing. So as we're recording this, there are 3-4, which is a perfectly fine way to start a season. I want to start with Jared Weaver because I've been somebody who kind of, you know, rolled her eyes at the notion that he's going to be able to put this thing together. And then he had a gritty outing. So what was – tell us the details around that.
Yeah, you know, he pitches really well at home. He's always going to be an advantage at home. It's a great ballpark for him. Fly balls don't carry very well. That kind of rock pile in left center field creates deception with his arm slot. But aside from that, a very, very encouraging start for Jared Weaver. And, you know, we talked about him last week about how defiant he was and how confident he was that he was going to continue to be an effective starting pitcher. And, you know, he showed that. His fastball topped out at 84 miles an hour, which actually is an improvement from where he was in the spring. But he located it masterfully all day. He offset it with his changeup. He threw in a 66-mile-an-hour curveball that kept guys off balance. And he just attacked hitters. I spoke to Giovanni Soto, who obviously this is his first year with the Angels, and he only caught Jared Weaver in that sort of carefree environment of spring training. And catching him in that first regular season start is when Giovanni finally saw the competitor in Jared Weaver come out. And he saw him attacking hitters. He saw him bearing down when he had base runners on. And he just saw a guy who loves to compete, and it doesn't matter how hard he's throwing. He's going to go after you with his stuff. And, you know, it was really impressive to watch. Jared Weaver's margin for error will remain really, really small, and he's usually going to do better at home. But, I mean, you got to give it up for a guy like that who just, you know, goes out there and competes no matter how he's doing, no matter how hard he's throwing. And you know, one thing about Jared, he feels like he's going to get better. He feels like as he continues to add strength, he feels like his arm's going to be better. At least that's what he said when he exited his start. We'll see about that. But he has confidence that there's actually some upside here.
Yeah, it's going to be very interesting to keep an eye on, because will he build strength and will he gain some miles an hour in his fastball? And if not, can he just make it through with 84? I kind of have my doubts about that. But, I mean, like you said, I mean, he is defiantly going to make this work, and good for him. I think it's interesting, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had a little piece on that they're shifting more than they had before. They're actually shifting more than anybody in baseball.
A lot more, yeah.
A lot more. So is that, I mean, that's obviously a new thing. I mean, they've always ranked kind of in the middle about how much they've shifted in the past. So this is obviously a difference in thinking with the new analytically minded front office, right?
Absolutely. Mike Socha continues to say that the information that they're getting now is better than what they had before. Obviously, there's no way of really knowing that unless you're in the inner circle there. But Billy Epler did install an analytics team. It's the first time they've ever had an analytics team, although Jerry DePoto previously had a lot of analytically inclined executives. But, I mean, these guys are really freaking smart. I mean, they're not even really baseball people. I mean, the guy who's heading it, Jonathan Luman, was a propulsion engineer who worked for Johns Hopkins University in his previous job. And he's a brainiac. And, you know, and the thing about the Angels is, first of all, they're shifting more than anybody in baseball. At least they were through the first six games of their season. They're shifting left-handed hitters. They're shifting right-handed hitters. They're shifting within count. They have different defensive alignments for depending on whether their starting pitcher is right-handed or left-handed, what their tendencies are, who's on base. I mean, it's basically every hitter, they have a different alignment. And for them, I think it's extra beneficial because most nights, the vast majority of nights, they have CJ Cron at first and Johnny Giovatella at second. Those two guys bring offense, but they do have their deficiencies defensively, and if they could shrink the field, you know, that's not really going to be as pronounced as it normally would be. Sometimes you have Angelton Simmons playing on the right side, sometimes you know Escobar. They're constantly shifting their defense around, and you know, it's all about shrinking the field. I think the sample size is still too small to know whether or not it's really working, but logic says that you play these things out over really large sample sizes, and at the end of the day, after a 162-game sample size, if you stay with it and if you trust the numbers, it's going to go in your favor.
So, Brian, let's talk about, first of all, Evan Gattis came off of the disabled list today as we're taping this, and he's started the season on the disabled list, and now he's back. So what can we expect to see from him?
Well, I think we'll see what he did last year. Occasional power, game-changing power. And when he gets hot, he can carry the club for a few days. And, you know, he did lead the team in homers and RBIs last year. You know, he did have his problems with strikeouts and not getting on base maybe at a high enough clip. Also led them in triples, by the way, with 11. So I don't know if we'll see that again. But, you know, he's going to be a presence in the lineup. And we've seen through the first week with this lineup, they have a lot of power. And 1 through 9, anybody can do some damage. So adding Gattis now just makes him that much more dangerous. He hit a couple of homers in Corpus Christi. So he's a big, strong guy with a big bat. And, you know, I think he'll get most of the starts at DH, I think. It'd be hard to sit Preston Tucker with the way he's swinging the bat. So I think AJ's just going to have to find a way to mix and match with Tucker, Gattis, and try to keep him as fresh as they can.
Was this about the amount of time that they thought Gattis was going to be out, about missing about a week of the season? Was that the timetable?
No, I think it's a little longer. He had surgery just before spring training, and I think it was 4 to 6 weeks. So we're close to 2 months. So, you know, they took it easy with him.
Hernia surgery, right?
Yeah, sports hernia surgery. So they took it easy with him. They did have Tucker, which they're comfortable giving Tucker at bat. So they did have other options. And, you know, another thing is to consider catching. And Evan just said that he's going to start doing some catching drills, and I think we will see him in a game at catcher at some point this year. And, you know, that's something that AJ wants to keep alive. So he didn't do any of that in spring training. And that's something they wanted him to do all through spring training, so that set him back a little bit as well.
On a much less significant note, he seems to have shaven not only the beard, but his head too. Is he just a big cue ball right now?
He is. There's a little bit of stubble coming back, and I think his quote was, "I got tired of looking at that nasty mustache in the mirror." But when he left to go on rehab, he had mutton chops and a mustache, and then to see him clean-shaven on the video clip was kind of shocking, so never know what you're going to get with him.
You think Dallas Keuchel will maybe be next?
You know, Keuchel has always said at some point he's going to shave the beard for charity. So, it would be really shocking to see him without it now. But, yeah, there was a time when he was fresh-faced and cleanly shaved, too. And that's kind of hard to remember.
I remember when he got called up. And then he better check with the marketing people before he shaves that thing.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so moving on to Tyler White. It's just so much fun when – because Tyler White and Trevor Story were respective players of their league, players of the week. Not rookies, but players. So the only reason that maybe the country isn't talking about Tyler White is because we're split. Everyone's splitting, and some are talking about Trevor Story. But how can we possibly explain what this young man has done in a week's worth of Major League games?
You can't really. And, you know, you look at his track record and his numbers in the minor leagues, and you're like, well, he's got to come up here and prove it. And he comes out of the bat, he's 12 for 22, and you're like, okay, he can do it here too. You know, he's going to have some trouble somewhere down the line, and he's going to have his struggles and probably be benched. But I think he just keeps things simple. You talk to him, he doesn't overcomplicate things, and he puts the bat on the ball. AJ talked about things like swinging at good strikes, not complicating things, good ball to bat skills, and it's just the basics of hitting. And he doesn't chase a lot of pitches, and he's got surprising pop. I mean, he hit a couple of monster home runs, and I really didn't think we'd see that kind of pop from him. And lo and behold, he's got three home runs already. So just a great story. And it will be interesting to see as the season goes along. He's hitting the ball up the middle a lot. Are people going to start shifting on him? How's he going to adjust to that? So he's got work to do, but it's been a fun story so far.
Yeah, it seems like even though, I mean, the Astros are a little bit below 500, it doesn't matter. It's just a week's worth of games. But we've seen a lot of what we think we're going to see. I mean, Carlos Correa has had, obviously, a nice start to the season. Jose Altuve stealing a lot of bases. Colin McHugh, as you noted, his ERA dropped about 120 points with a very good outing against the Royals. So I was just wondering, you know, it was mostly, I think, because of the cold weather why his first start wasn't very good. But you do have it in the back of your mind. You're like, oh, my goodness, you know, is this the start of something? He shut down one of the most potent offenses in the league. That had to make everybody feel a little better.
Yeah, it was a sigh of relief. And I think you can just, that first start at Yankee Stadium, I think you just push it aside. It was an aberration. I mean, I think it was close to 40 degrees at first pitch, and it was hard to grip the ball. But that was the Colin McHugh against the Royals that we saw and should expect. So I know a lot of people were ready to push the panic button after one start. But McHugh's going to be fine. And, yeah, I think what we've seen from the Astros a weekend is what they are. They're going to score a lot of runs. And they're going to hit a lot of home runs, and they're not striking out as much as last year. Chris Carter's not here, of course, but the lineup is longer and it's tougher, and Gattis back's just going to make it that much tougher.